Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Workers' Compensation Fund versus Rodriguez.
May it please the court, Mr. David Brenner will present an argument from petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is David Brenner. Sitting with me at counsel table is Jeff Boggess, senior staff attorney for my client, the Texas Workers' Compensation Insurance Fund. The issue before this court is whether a recreational or athletic activity which occurs during a work break is compensable under the Workers' Compensation Act. The undisputed facts below was that on January 23, 1993, Gerardo Rodriguez was on a 10-minute work break. During that 10-minute work break, he was free to do as he saw fit. He and several other employees decided to play catch football. As he was running to catch the football, he tripped, fell, and injured his knee. All of the facts below are undisputed except for one, which is germane to the respondent's motion for summary judgment below at the trial court. That fact is not germane unless this court finds that the MERS test applies here. And the only dispute is whether or not he was required to hold himself in readiness during the break. We've provided the Supreme Court with a handout. The handout provides the specific areas where we feel the Court of Appeals erred in this case. Specifically, abandoning the traditional test that this court and all courts in the state of Texas have used in determining compensability, they found that simply because Mr. Rodriguez was on break, regardless of what activity he was pursuing, the injury was compensable. Furthermore, in making that finding, they made a fact finding which is nowhere on the record and is no way supported by the record. And that is that the breaks originated in the workplace because grinding unceasingly would be hazardous and not having breaks would not be the most efficient manner of running the business.
If Mr. Rodriguez had been trotting to the bathroom on his break and injured his knee, would you still be here arguing that that is not an on-the-job injury in the course and scope?
It would depend a little more on the facts of the case. Under course and scope, there's a two-part analysis of determining compensability. First, whether it is in furtherance of the employer's affairs, and second, whether it was risk or hazard, an instrumentality of the employment, that caused the injury. What you've addressed is a comfort doctrine. The courts in Texas have interpreted course and scope to allow an exception to furthering your employer's first part test. That exception is if the employee is doing something that he has to do to function as a human being, things like relieving thirst, relieving hunger, going to the restroom, then they're still in the course and scope. The comfort doctrine, however, has never ever been applied by any court to a social or recreational activity. It's a very, very limited example or exception. And should this court include the comfort doctrine in this, in effect, the exception would eat up the rule.
So that's why you would draw a line between, during a break, someone being in a coffee room, and during a break, someone going outside and tossing football.
Well, the focus has never been on whether they're on a break or not. In fact, under Texas law, whether they're on a break, whether they're at work, or whether they're at home isn't really the factor. The factor is, what is the activity they're doing that results in the injury? For example, in Lujan, this court addressed a situation where the employee was at home after work. The employee was washing gasoline off the body. There was no question in the Lujan case that he wasn't at work, he wasn't on the job. But the gasoline had to be washed off the body because it's dangerous, and it arose due to work. And when he walked into the bathroom, the fumes from his body ignited him and resulted in death. If you focus on whether he's on a break, you ignore the legislative mandate on whether it's actually an activity in furtherance of the employer's affairs. What this court has to focus on, according to its own holdings, is what is the activity that leads to the injury.
So in your view, this is simply horseplay.
It may be horseplay. It may arise from horseplay, which is expressly excluded of the Workers' Compact. But whether or not it's horseplay, it's certainly not a He's not doing his job, so he's not in furtherance of the employer.
But he's being paid.
That's correct, Your Honor, but this court has never focused on whether he's being paid or not being paid. That's not a test that this court is
doing. Is that his employer's place of business?
That's another thing that this court has traditionally disregarded. For example, in Lujan, he wasn't being paid. In ISIS...
But Lujan wasn't on the employer's premises. On the employer's premises, if I'm on the employer's premises during business hours and I get injured, isn't it horseplay that's the exception?
No.
What's the other exception?
The focus has never been on whether you're on the premises. In fact, the Labor Code's definition in the other handout says that the injury is if you're in the furtherance of the employer's affairs, whether or not you're on the premises. And in American General versus Williams, one example, the employees were on the employer's premises. They were ready to do their job, but they weren't required at that moment to do their job, so they played craps. During a craps game, one employee was killed as a result of the fight coming up from the craps game. They were on the premises. They were ready to do their job. But the court held it wasn't compensable because this game of craps wasn't a risk or hazard of the employment and wasn't in the furtherance of the employment.
Would this be different from a company that sponsors a sports team?
I don't think it would. Section 406.032, which is an express exclusion in Texas, holds out that if you voluntarily engage in an off-duty recreational activity, and you're not required to participate, and it's not an expectancy of the employment, it wouldn't be compensable.
What does that mean, not an expectancy?
There is
no... I mean, they certainly expected this was going to happen because they did it every day.
That's correct. But that, Your Honor, I believe is more of a foreseeability analysis. Is it foreseeable? Texas hasn't used foreseeable in evaluating whether an injury is compensable or not with respect to workers' comp.
Well,
there are no.
If it's foreseeable, it looks so grim from your side. Because they did it every day. They knew this was going on all the time.
That's correct. But under Texas law and its interpretation, whether the event was foreseeable isn't the factor that the court looks at. Expectancy of employment means that it would be an event that you would expect the employee to do whether or not he wants to. For example, a truck driver is expected to drive a truck. That's his job. He's required to do that. If he gets a flat tire, you would expect that he would change the tires. He would still be in the furtherance of his affairs.
What's the testimony, very specifically, on the record of this case as to how many employees played and how high up in the company ranks they were and how often they played and how long it had been going on?
There wasn't testimony in the record with respect to that whatsoever. There was testimony in the record that management personnel did participate from time to time. The only evidence in the record with respect to expectancy was on page 139 of the record, which was the affidavit of the supervisor, which was uncontroverted. In that, he testifies that the company did not expect employees to toss a football or engage in any particular social, athletic, or recreational activity during breaks, and that they were free to do what they wanted during breaks.
I'm trying to figure out how to parse this line. If I'm not on official break, but I just have a friend who works down on floor number 3 and I'm on floor number 4, and I just want to convey a message to him, and so I'm just going down the stairway in the building and I stumble and injure myself, it seems to me your position would be that that's not covered by compensation because at the exact time I'm injured, I'm not in the course and scope of my employment. And I mean, is that your position? I mean,
that's not my position. My position would be
if it is not, then what differentiates the walking down the stairway there that would be covered, and I've got a 10-minute break, so my walk just happens to be out onto a playground and coming back across the field, and I'm injured.
The difference would be the extent of the injury and the extent of the exposure to the employer. In that analysis, what you may be looking at is the comfort analysis. It may be that under that factual scenario, it may or may not be covered depending on the jury. It's a question of fact. Because the jury would have to determine whether this is something that a human being needs to do in order to function as a worker. And that would protect him on the course and scope. But certainly an athletic or recreational activity shouldn't fit under that narrow exception. In fact, in a very, very similar situation, this court addressed the scenario you were addressing in the Yale Law case when they created the Comfort Doctor case. In that case, you had a person who was making a telephone call to their daughter. After they put down the telephone call, phone became wrapped up in a 50-cup urn and spilled on her. This court held that it was compensable. But they did so saying that it was compensable because she was doing something that is necessary for humans to function. Whether it's drinking water or passing on a brief message or calling your daughter, you can't expect workers to function without doing these little things. And a brief walking to pass a message on to a friend who may be on a different floor is different than going outside and engaging in athletic activity, which has risk inherent in and of themselves.
It's possible then walking to that, if it's a break, and you go for a walk, that might be covered, because that would be a comfort thing. But if you throw a football or something, then during that period of time, it wouldn't in the same 10-minute period.
But the focus that this court and legislature puts on us in that scenario is this a risk or hazard of the employment? There's a second part test. In American General v. Williams, this court said that plane crafts can't be a risk or hazard of the construction business. It's just not something that construction business did. And so you're no longer involved in a risk or hazard of the employment. If you're walking within the building to talk to a coworker and you get hurt while you're walking within the building, that's a risk or hazard unique to the place of employment.
Where do you get the risk or hazard language from?
Judge, other than the case law, if you look at compensable injury, it says that an injury is compensable if the injury arises out of and if the injury arises out of a risk associated with and is in the course and scope of employment. Then, below that, course and scope of employment is defined. That has always been the traditional test. You'll find that in American General v. Williams.
Is it a words risk or hazard in the statute?
I believe it is, Your Honor. If you look at the definition of course and scope of employment, which is in the handout, it says compensable injury means an injury that arises out of. And interpreting arises out of, this court has held that risk arising out of means that it's a risk or hazard arising out of the course and scope of employment. And specifically, that's in American General v. Williams, Deatherage v. International, which is a Supreme Court case, which I cited in my brief, and even in the Court of Appeals decision below.
You've said it doesn't matter whether the injury may occur on a break or not on a break.
That's correct.
And you've said it doesn't matter exactly what the location is, whether it's a break room or outside.
That's correct.
And you focus on what the activity is.
That's correct.
I have observed a situation where lawyers who are working on a case, debating a case, in a law office, have been throwing a football around to help them arguably analyze the case. What if they got hurt in the course of arguing about the case, throwing a football around? Would that be a compensable injury under your analysis?
Would it be in the course and scope? Probably. Because they were furthering their employer's affairs when they were doing it. Would it be a risk or hazard originating in the workplace if the football hit him in the eye? Probably not under that scenario. But again, that would be a question of fact for the jury to determine that specific case. It couldn't be determined as a matter of law in that specific case. In this case, The Court of Appeals departed from that analysis completely. What they held is that the only thing that matters is that they were on a work break. And therefore, since they're on a work break, it doesn't matter what they're doing. Now,
but they could have argued it was force play. I mean, the argument could have been that this was force play and we wouldn't be in all this argument at all. Or not. I mean,
horse play has traditionally been limited to when you're actually doing your job and you stop doing your job and two employees start pushing yourself around. I believe that could include this scenario. However, I don't think it does because horse play is usually something that's not approved by the employer. But in a horse play situation where you have the supervisor and an employee pushing each other around for the fun of it, that would fall into certain. Focus on the activity as opposed to the time effect.
Any other questions?
Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Mark Garcia will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. Chief Justice Phillips, Justices of the Texas Supreme Court, my name is Mark Garcia, and I represent the respondent, Jerry Rodriguez. Jerry Rodriguez was injured while at work on a regular routine 10-minute scheduled break that happened every day while they were playing catch football. They weren't playing a game of football. They weren't running for passes necessarily. They're just throwing the ball around. Because in Mr. Rodriguez's line of work, he is a grinder. And at BPC, Billy Pugh Company, where he was working, they deal with heavy equipment, heavy machinery, and as the 13th Court of Appeals correctly stated, to simply be working at these tasks all day without some sort of diversion or some sort of exercise to make the muscles more limber from being crouched all day and whatnot would be a danger to himself.
That sounds reasonable, but is there evidence of it?
Is there evidence as to
what you said? That it was beneficial to the employer for the employee to take a break?
Certainly, Your Honor, there is evidence to that. One of the common rules of construction is just simply apply common sense. When Mr. Rodriguez is working all day at this grinding task with a heavy grinder, in heavy clothes, with goggles, maybe a hood, gloves, he's indoors, ventilation is probably not so good. To be outdoors would certainly be good for the employee and good for the employer because the employee would be ready to go back to work.
But is there evidence of, say, the ventilation in this case?
No, Your Honor. I'm simply... My common knowledge of what these factories and scenarios appear to be.
Commissioner Rodriguez chosen to read a book during his break instead of play.
And was injured in reading that book somehow?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, it depends on the injury. If a jealous husband came in and shot him.
Well, but I'm talking about the options of the employee. Could he have chosen not to play? And do something else, like read a book or take a nap.
I beg your pardon. Yes, Your Honor.
And then he was injured in that.
Yes, Your Honor. The policy of Billy Q Company was that the employees could do as they chose on these 10-minute breaks. But I think if the employer did impliedly authorize or, in fact, require Mr. Rodriguez to participate in these activities because, as the record demonstrated, the vice president of the company participated in these activities every day.
But before we get to that question of the exception and whether there was implied authorization, we have to determine whether or not this injury occurred in the course and scope of employment.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your opponent has indicated that the Court of Appeals' emphasis is not in accordance with Texas law by looking at the time period and location as opposed to the specific activity. Do you disagree with his interpretation of existing case law about what we should look to determine the course and scope of employment?
I slightly disagree, Your Honor. He's right
on
one point.
What is Texas law, then?
We have to look at the activity. We have to look at the time. We have to look at the place. We have to look at the circumstance. We cannot be so narrow as to simply focus on the place or simply focus on the activity. We need to look at the totality of the circumstances.
Well, he says we have to look at the activity and we have to look at the injury.
The activity and the injury
are one. He says that Texas law says you don't worry about where it may have occurred or the time period involved. Is there any case law that tells us that we need to look at the time period or the location as determinative of whether the activity was undertaken in the course and scope of the employment?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, there is, and it is a Supreme Court case of Shook. It's a 1931 case, Southern Surety versus Shook, at 44 Southwest 2nd, 425. And the court addressed that very issue by stating that had Mr. Shook, as, I don't know if you're familiar with the facts, but he was taken away from his employment. His job was to watch a well site, and he had a little cabin out there where he lived and stayed. So it was pretty much a 24/7 job, watching the well, maintaining the well, oiling it. And some neighbors came by and they wanted to kill him, and to rob him was their motive. And they took him away from his cabin under the pretense that they were going to go wolf hunting. And the court stated that this pretense of wolf hunting was within the course and scope of employment, was in furtherance of the employer's affairs, because Mr. Shook needed some form of diversion. Irregardless of the fact that he was murdered and that was the true purpose in leading him away, in Shook's mind, he was going for diversion. He could still hear the well. He was within sound shot of the well. So one of the concerns is place.
But he was still doing his job if he could still hear the well.
Correct. The court stated
so
in
that
Shook,
was an activity then in furtherance of his employer's business.
Yes, Your Honor.
He was shooting dice with the vice president as opposed to tossing a football, and the vice president got an argument with him and hit him.
Well, in the case which cited the craps game, that should not be a compensable injury. Of course not. That occurred not on a regular scheduled break.
No, wait, I'm talking about this case. Let's suppose that instead, in this case, he was on his 10-minute break, he was being paid, and instead of tossing a football with the vice president, he was shooting dice.
Under the way that the petitioner has stated their argument by not citing intentional acts of another party, if we're not going to cite the intentional acts of another party as an exception, then I'd say that would be a compensable injury, because it happened during a regularly scheduled routine break, wherein, and especially if these guys play craps every day on both of these 10-minute breaks, then it would be implicitly authorized by the employer. The employer would have notice of it. And if the employer didn't cut that out, then the employer should be responsible.
Same would be true if he were juggling knives?
No, Your Honor, because I don't think that's reasonable.
Well, here's my point. Juggling knives would not be reasonable. Playing touch football, as you argue, is reasonable. They seem to vary depending upon exactly what the facts are. What will you articulate for us to be a bright line rule that we can establish as a legal principle so that other people can look at it in the future and apply?
Well, I wish I had the wisdom, knowledge, and experience to where I could tell the Supreme Court of Texas how to enunciate a bright line rule.
This is your chance.
I thought about it. I don't think that there can be a bright line rule in these types of cases. We have to look at the totality of the circumstances. We have to look at the activity, the time, and the place. And the bright line rule would be if it's in furtherance of the employer's business. And that still is not necessarily a bright line rule because there's lots of room for advocacy.
Well, the recreational aspect arguably is in furtherance of the business of the company. But it's recreational when they toss the football. It's not recreational when they toss knives. So we're into a fact situation.
Correct. Tossing knives, for instance, I don't see how it would be in furtherance of the employer's business. It's much like...
So people may find it relaxing?
It's like the petitioner's analogy of Russian roulette. That's ridiculous, respectfully, to the petitioner. Nobody should be compensated for playing Russian roulette if they shoot themselves in the head. Of course not. Nor playing with knives, because that's a dangerous activity. Tossing a football is not an inherently dangerous activity. Playing a game of football, maybe. People get hit, people get hurt. But simply tossing a ball to and from one another is not an inherently dangerous activity. And maybe that could be one factor we look at.
But we've got the statute. We are confined by the statute. And it talks about voluntary participation in off-duty recreational activities or athletic activities. And can you help us? How do we distinguish this tossing the football when it was voluntary participation? Is there any evidence it wasn't voluntary?
Well, that's my best argument, Your Honor, and I'm glad you reminded me of it. Section 406.032 doesn't even apply. It does not apply to this case at all. 406.032 does not apply because Mr. Rodriguez was not off-duty. The petitioner has stated a couple of definitions in their response brief that the Billy Pugh Company representative, Mr. Labarto, who presented an affidavit, stated that the employees were off-duty. What else is he going to say? Naturally, he would say this, but they're not off-duty. You can say potato or potato or a rose by any other name, smells just as sweet, what is in a name. He's not off duty. He's on the clock. He's on the employer's premises. He's not free to go home or go fishing or go watch TV. After 600 seconds, he has to go back to work. After 10 minutes, he's required to go back to work. And he's still on the clock. He doesn't punch out for these breaks.
What if he walked across the road to the 7-Eleven and was hit by a truck during his 10-minute break?
Well, that would be a little less close to right on than ours. It would be a little, I think, because he's further away from the premises. And if it's not like a normal activity that he does every day.
Let's say he goes every day at 7-Eleven to get a soft drink on his break.
And if the employer knows of it, I'd say that should be a compensable injury as well. The Texas Workers' Compensation Act is intended to be interpreted broadly.
What difference does it make if the employer knows he goes across the street to get a Dr. Pepper?
Well, it goes a little bit, I think, is to the MERSH test of the third prong, whether the employer has knowledge or impliedly authorizes said activity. So I think in that sense, if the employer knows, because an employer being a boss, my sister runs businesses, my dad's a banker, so I understand the other side of the coin. But businessmen need to nip this in the bud. If you see somebody running around out in a yard where you know there's holes, under typical land occupier's liability law, you should warn that person or prevent them from doing that. And I think a prudent boss would have done that, or the vice president of the company is out there himself. If it seems to be a danger to the employees, I think that the businessmen or women, the boss should come forward and say, we're going to do jumping jacks, we're going to run in place, we're not going to throw a ball around because that may be dangerous.
Do you agree with opposing counsel that there's no evidence in the record about what percentage of the employees engaged in the football throw and how many officers there were? And you say every day, he says occasionally. I mean, we'll read the record, but just for a little help.
They toss the football pretty much every day, Your Honor, and the vice president pretty much partook in this every day.
Was this everybody?
No, Your Honor.
Or maybe three out of 30.
I'd say it was probably just a handful, maybe five.
And how many employees were essentially Mr. Rodriguez's specific many peers that he had out there?
Honestly, Your Honor, I beg the court's pardon, I could not answer that. I don't know. I would assume it's just a handful of guys out there throwing a ball, five, seven.
So there's no, you're not making any contention there was pressure, either peer pressure or pressure from above to participate in this.
Well, yes,
somebody who didn't do it would kind of be the oddball.
I would argue that, Your Honor. Certainly.
From the record or?
Yes, from the record, because the vice president of the company partook in this activity.
I'm not clear why the fact that this person was the vice president makes it a mandated activity.
Well, it's not mandated outwardly, but I think implicitly it is. If I'm playing ball with the boss of the company every day and then one day I quit playing with him, he may think I have something against him.
Well, what about the other way? The boss plays every once in a while, he quits.
Well, he's the boss, and I would let him do that.
But being I'm trying to understand how, because he's the vice president, that makes what was happening a mandated break and a mandated activity that was a reasonable expectancy of his employment, which is what the Court of Appeals held. Just because a vice president was there on one or more occasions.
No, Your Honor. And also, it's a mandated break. They have to take
the
break.
It.
They don't
but
have to play
football. But that's not what we're worried about. Aren't we worried about the activity that takes place on the mandated break?
Well, it was implicitly authorized by the employer. By him not curtailing it, by him not nipping it in the bud, he authorized it. Because he knew of it. And he knew that this took place every day. And his vice president was a member. Everybody was doing it.
Mr. Garcia? Do you have any authority or have any cases construed or defined or given a gloss to the word off-duty? You say that a grinder is off-duty who's not grinding. A grinder is on duty when he's not grinding, when he's playing ball.
Correct, Your Honor.
But have you been able to find any case law or authority for the proposition that if you're not doing the task that you're paid to do and you're doing some recreational activity, that you're on duty?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeldell, the Yeldell case, which was decided by the Supreme Court of Texas in 1985, in that case, as petitioner mentioned the facts briefly, Ms. Yeldell was a nurse and she took some time off to call her daughter at home. I think that's an excellent example. The Supreme Court law As well, something that they state in Yaldell, which I think just hits home right here, it's right on point. In dicta in Yaldell, this court stated that in particular, a parent's telephone call to a minor child at bedtime is as reasonably necessary to a worker's well-being as quenching the thirst, quenching the hunger. It is more common than exercise or recreation. What the court's stating right there is that exercise or recreation is far away and above more important to furthering the employer's business than a telephone call. And if this court held in 1985 that by making a telephone call she was still within the course and scope of employment, I'd argue, because in dicta they stated and their reasoning goes along with, that it is more common than exercise or recreation, as was approved in Shook. So Yaldell, Shook, as well as Mersch, are all excellent examples, Your Honor. And again, I've got to stress the fact that the Texas Workers' Compensation Act needs to be interpreted broadly. With every doubt that this court may have, be put in favor of my client, Mr. Rodriguez. And why is that? What's the policy behind that? Well, Mr. Rodriguez doesn't have a team of lawyers. I'm Mr. Rodriguez's lawyer. And I tried to find other lawyers to help me on this, but nobody wanted to take me. So the working man has got it pretty hard today. Business is doing well in Texas. The purpose of tort law and insurance is to compensate people when they get injured. Mr. Rodriguez wasn't playing craps. Mr. Rodriguez wasn't playing Russian roulette or playing with knives. He wasn't doing a dangerous activity. He was stretching. He was jogging. He was catching a ball. He was getting fresh air. This is certainly in furtherance of the employer's affairs. This is certainly within the course and scope of employment. The appeals panel's commission correctly stated, Judge Pate, who is a very conservative judge, ruled in summary judgment that Mr. Rodriguez was injured in the course and scope of employment. Bonner Dorsey of the 13th Court of Appeals affirmed that by stating that to be grinding incessantly all day is a hazard and it's dangerous. Mr. Rodriguez needs to do exercise, as was stated in Yaldell. It's more common than exercise or recreation, as was approved in Shook. And I feel that if this court is going to reverse and render or remand, we're going to have a problem with Yaldell. We're going to have a problem with Shook. Shook, I think it was writ refused, no reversible error, that 1931 case. And I think that if we look at stare decisis and precedent, this is well-settled case law. It's very simple. You notice that the brief we tendered to you is very simple, succinct, to the point. It is that simple. The petitioner would like to complicate it with their briefs and all this talk of, you know, 406.032, which doesn't even apply because Mr. Rodriguez wasn't off duty. They'd like to talk about all this statutory interpretation and how we should interpret these statutes. But I think that that is just smoke and mirrors. Since we won at the last three levels, I'm convinced that the petitioner is just trying to confuse me. And when I read their briefs, I was confused. I got worried. I thought maybe I was missing something. But I'm not confused. It is very simple. And we can keep it simple. We simply determine whether this is a compensable injury. To determine that, we determine whether Mr. Rodriguez was in the course and scope of employment.
Mr. Rodriguez did testify that he did not consider this activity to be part of his job duties.
Correct. He felt that he was free to do whatever he wants. Jerry he's a very nice guy. He was still working for Billy Pugh Company when he testified. I don't think he was going to say anything that was going to endanger his job, even though he got fired after his surgery.
Was he going to lie?
He would do what was necessary to keep his job and support his family and four and his wife. Jerry's not an athletic guy either. He's a big guy. He's overweight. You know, he's not out there like running and diving for footballs. Because if he was running and diving for football, maybe that wouldn't be a compensable injury. But he wasn't running and diving for football. They were simply playing a game of catch. So it wasn't an inherently dangerous activity that they were doing. So again, I ask that this court uphold the spirit of the Texas Workers' Compensation Act, especially these days when we have so many jobs going over the borders, going overseas. We've got robots taking the place of working men and women. Business is doing well, as I stated. The working man and woman aren't doing so well. So I respectfully ask this court to uphold the spirit of the Workers' Compensation Act, compensate Mr. Rodriguez for his injury. All he's asking for is that his future medical bills be paid. It's really not a large amount of money at all. And he gave up a lot of common law rights when he came under the provisions of the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. And he deserves protection. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
consideration given to the fact that the appellate process and the workers' compensation law, the agency came out in favor of
the appellate judge who tried this the first time found that it wasn't in the course and scope of regulation.
But then it was appealed.
The appeals panel, relying on an expansion of the comfort doctrine and relying on MERS in their first interpretation of the statute, section 406.032, reversed. This court is not required to give any consideration to the appeals panel's interpretation of a legislative statute. If it was a rule of the commission that the commission hadn't acted, then deference is in order. So this court held that when interpreting statute, no, you don't do that.
What about
their expertise in this area? Well,
their expertise in interpreting the rules is entitled to, according to this court, this isn't entitled to deference, but their expertise in interpreting statutes certainly doesn't compare to the expertise of this court, and therefore this court reviews it.
What about the Shook decision?
In Shook, the Eastern Court of Appeals went to great lengths to explain two things. One, while he was going on this track, it was in fact a track of people set to him so they could murder him, he was still in furtherance of the affairs. His job was just to listen to the pump and make sure it was working. And they pointed out that he could do that for as far as a mile away, and he was no more than half a mile away. Second, with respect to whether it's an injury that arises out of the course and scope of employment, the Eastland Court of Appeals pointed out that the fact that he was walking away to look at the wolf was not in any way the cause of his injury. He would have been injured whether he was at the pump, in the employment premises, or anywhere else, because they wanted to kill him because of where he was at, working for the employer, and not because of what he was doing.
What is your best argument that 406.0321D applies?
Your Honor, 406.0321D did not exist prior to 1989. It was first codified in 1989. Prior to 1989, there were four cases which dealt with recreational activities. Those cases dealt with recreational activities that occurred during break, compensated or otherwise, and during lunch, compensated or otherwise. One case held that it was compensable, and that was the De La Rouche case, which I'll supplement with the site out of Dallas. The El Paso court rejected it, saying, no, it's not. And American General versus Williams, the Supreme Court rejected it. And Merce mentions it in dicta. And the recreational exception in that case was a three-prong test. Was he involved in a recreational activity, off work or otherwise? Was it near the place of employment? And was it required? And was he holding himself in readiness? The legislature has codified that, and they've rejected, by codifying previous common law, you have to assume that they rejected those portions of the common law that they didn't think were accurate.
Mr. Garcia argues that this is not applied. Number one, it was not in effect at the time of his injury. Number two, it's Mr. Rodriguez was on duty.
This was effective 1989, effective 1991. His injury was in 1994, and therefore the statute was effective.
Well, Mr. Rodriguez, according to Mr. Garcia, was off duty.
That's correct.
Excuse me, was on duty.
Okay. This court, if you look at whether on duty is punching in the clock or punching out the clock, you create two classes of employees in the state of Texas. Employees like me never clock in and never clock out. Whether I'm on duty, whether I'm being paid, is only determined by what I'm doing. What you're saying is that for me, since I'm always on duty, always doing my job, I would be covered in instances where the hourly workers wouldn't. The on-the-clock, off-the-clock analysis doesn't work for all employees.
Do you punch out the clock when you're going to play football?
I never punch in or punch out.
No, but Mr. Rodriguez was not required to punch out during the break, was he?
He wasn't. And he wasn't required to punch out during lunch. But he wasn't compensated for lunch. No.
Mr. Brenner, my concern about your argument, though, taken to the logical extreme of your argument, is that if I'm a clerk typist and I go in and punch in at 8, and I punch out at 5, and I'm injured at the job. Seems to me the logical extension of your argument is that you could defend the comp request on a basis that at the exact point in time that the injury occurred, the person was not in the course and scope of their employment, and not have to rely on the horseplay exception to that, so that virtually any case becomes a fact case on an injury in course and scope.
Judge, it's my belief, and Texas law certainly suggests that every case is a fact case. In fact, specifically cited in my brief, the Waco Court of Appeals dealt with a situation where an employee, such as you mentioned, a clerical employee, was at work, and that clerical employee wanted a box so she could send cookies to her son. And all she was doing was carrying the box to her car in a parking lot owned by the employer. The courts held that was not compensable because she was undertaking a personal matter. Since she was undertaking the personal matter, the injury arose out of
That was during office hours.
During office hours.
And that was not considered a personal errand.
She didn't leave the premises. And so I go back to what this court has always said, focuses on the individual.
How about Yandel making a phone call which helps me compensable?
That is only the very, very limited exception. In Yandel, this court held that it's a human necessity to make a phone call. In the modern days of electronics, it's a human necessity. But I don't think this court has ever gone on to expand human necessity to athletic activity, which is what was undertaken.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in the third call. The court will take